You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way, and doubters of the veracity of... Let's spend the day talking about this, okay? Or the next couple of hours here. How can somebody win a debate when they tell 27 lies in 38 minutes? How can they do that? How could anybody in the media say that that's a win? Now, I'd be the first to say that, in my opinion, the president should have said, hey, wait a minute. You know, when the president first said, you've got a $5 trillion tax cut, and Mitt Romney says, no, I don't have a $5 trillion tax cut. And the president should have said, then how much is your tax cut? And Romney would have said, well, it's revenue neutral, don't you know? And well, no. What percentage do you want to cut? Well, haven't you said you want to cut 20%? Except that that would have required the president to interrupt Romney. Romney would not talk, you know, he was playing bully on that. And I think right out of the gate, or not right out of the gate, but very early on in the debate, Romney said something that, I think shocked the president. Now, keep in mind, Romney's zingers, you know, we've heard that they've been planning these zingers for weeks, right? Working on them. I mean, there was nothing that Romney said last night that some group of people had not spent hours on. Hours. On every phrase. Or every significant phrase. So, you know, I got a kind of a flashback to one of my old favorite TV shows. Remember this? Oh, yeah! Fred McMurray and Robbie What's-His-Name and Bobby but it was My Three Boys, right? It wasn't? It wasn't My Three Boys?
Look, I got five boys. I'm used to people saying something that's not always true, but just keep on repeating it and ultimately hoping I'll believe it.
Just like that boy on the other side of the stage for me. You get it? I mean, I'm sitting there looking at the TV and I'm thinking, I don't think that any of Mitt Romney's kids are even teenagers. I mean, his youngest kid has got to be in his 20s. I don't refer to my son Justin as my boy. He's my son. I mean, maybe when he was six, he was my boy. But so you've got a group of people who are focus grouping. And they've just spent, you know, an entire news cycle trying to get this Obama's talking black video out there into the news. Fox News and Sean Hannity and all these guys just hysterically bloviating about it. How do we take another step on this and just whistle out to the... accomplish three things at once. Number one, whistle out to the white racists. Hey, if you noticed the guy across the stage from me, he's a boy. Number one. Number two, shock your debate opponent. Did he just call me a boy? And, you know, should I respond to that? And, I mean, you know, my mind would be spinning. And I had to pay people for a living. And number three, claim that the president of the United States, the man he's debating, is a serial liar. The TV show was My Three Sons, not My Three Boys. And I just, I doubt, maybe in some parts of radio land, particularly in urban radio, there's going to be a lot of discussion about this. I somehow suspect that there's not going to be any mention whatsoever of this in the largely white so-called corporate mainstream media. And in fact, many of those people, if they listened to the rant that I just shared with you over the last minute or two, would say, oh, come on, you're paranoid. And in fact, that was my first thought about myself. Romney just called the president a boy. A boy. you know, implicitly, and a liar. Oh, boys will be boys. They just lie, you know. Could he have understood what that meant? What that would mean to an African-American person? And then I immediately thought, as I'm watching the show, you know, you kind of have these internal conversations. As I'm watching the show, no, Romney, I mean, that he must have just misspoke. And then I got it, you know, no, there's no misspeaking here. This guy has planned everything he said. And it's not just he who planned it. It's, you know, Frank Luntz and the focus groups and the strategists and the people who helped put together the whole Hannity thing. I mean, it's been very carefully considered. So what was that music again, Shano? The here we are. My old favorite TV show when I was maybe, I don't know, 10 years old. Yes. My Three Boys. No. My Three Sons. Again, I just... Please tell me I'm paranoid here. And that I'm reading a lot into something that just doesn't exist. To think that Mitt Romney would use the word boy when referring to the first African-American president of the United States, in addition to arguing that he's a liar. And that line wasn't something that was carefully scripted by a group of a half a dozen people sitting in a room for hours as the perfect follow-up to 2 days of hysterical bloviation about, hey, have you seen the video of the president talking like a black guy? Which was, you know, basically Sean Hannity's thing. So once again, I my son is in his 30s, I think. Late 20s, early 30s. And I'd have to go back and do the math. And I don't refer to him as my boy. He's my son. Romney's youngest son is 34 years old. Well, he's older than my son. And he's Romney is saying this.
Look, I got five boys.
Boys.
I'm used to people saying something that's not always true, but just keep on repeating it and ultimately hoping I'll believe it.
Yeah, just like that boy on the other side of the stage from me. Okay, I've pounded on that one enough. I look forward to your thoughts on this, and I'm just going to open up the lines so that, like we did yesterday. You know, we took a lot of calls on what questions would you like to hear asked. Obviously, 99.999% of your questions never got asked because Jim Lehrer was, bumps on logs. I don't know. You know, he'd come up with a cliche. Romney played his bully routine. You know, when he was in high school and that young man who was probably gay and he pinned him down and cut his hair off. I mean, you know, Romney has like this life history of being a bully, whether it's to other people or whether it's to dogs. And he just slapped down Jim Lehrer, threatened to fire him. It was just quite the remarkable performance. I think the most important carry home from this, though, is 27 lies in 38 minutes. Mitt Romney spoke for a total of 38 minutes. And the Center for American Progress has compiled this over at their Think Progress blog. If you want to look through it, as we go through the day, we will cover these. CNN said, mostly fiction. Well, this is over from Democratic Underground. They got a great graphic up. Romney told 27 minutes and 38 minutes, Think Progress. David Gergen, Romney was just sort of flat out lying. I caught that on CNN. I'm like, whoa. Huffington Post, Romney walked back multiple positions, denied his own tax plan. Right. How do you win anything that involves ethics if you do it by lying?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So in that context, I'd have to say last night Mitt Romney lost big time, or the American people did. And I got to tell you about my take on Ronald Reagan right after this. Okay, watching during last night's debate, I just have to get this off my chest, and then I'm going to open the phone lines, and we can all talk about this for the rest of the day here. But, you know, I've shared with you, there were several moments last night where I just went, whoa! And one of them was when Mitt Romney called Barack Obama boy. The other one was, you know, watching the debate, I kept thinking to myself, I've seen this debate before. I mean, yeah, I know this is the first time Romney and Obama have ever debated each other, but in fact, it's one of the few times both men have even appeared on the same stage together. But I just knew I'd seen this debate before. It was making me crazy. And then it struck me about three quarters of the way through the debate. Last night's debate was 1980 all over again. Now, a lot of you aren't old enough to remember that or have watched that. I am. I did. This was Reagan versus Carter all over again. I have said many times that the only way Romney can win the election is to lie. The same was true of Ronald Reagan. As the Center for American Progress pointed out this morning, Mitt Romney told 27 lies and half-truths in the course of just the 38 minutes that he spoke during the debate. That's really staggering if you think about it. But, you know, just a major feat. But it's one that was easily pulled off because the moderator wasn't calling out any of the lies. And tragically, neither was the president. But Romney also, well, actually, the president did try to call him out three times, actually, on his lie about his tax plan. But Romney just kept lying with a smile. Romney also pulled it off by using the Ronald Reagan strategy of saying whatever it takes to win, just so long as you say it sincerely and with a smile. I mean, you know, listen to Reagan lying his way through the 1980 debate. First talking about a meeting he had with a young African-American about the minimum wage.
Now, the president spoke a moment ago about that I was against the minimum wage. I wish he could have been with me when I sat with a group of teenagers who were black and who were telling me about their unemployment problems and that it was the minimum wage that had done away with the jobs that they once could get. And indeed, every time it has increased, you will find that there is an increase in minority unemployment among young people.
Look how certain and sincere he looked, just like Mitt Romney. But it was a flat-out lie. It was later debunked. They could never, you know, Reagan couldn't identify that group of African-Americans he was meeting with. It was just like his welfare queen thing. They didn't exist. The African-Americans who were talking about how the minimum wage was hurting them. But he said it sincerely. Just like he talked sincerely when he took credit for creating workplace safety legislation as governor of California.
We created an OSHA, an Occupational Safety and Health Agency for the Protection of Employees, before the federal government had one in place. And to this day, not one of its decisions or rulings has ever been challenged.
Not true again. OSHA was passed by Democrats in California over Ronald Reagan's objections. But remember, talk sincerely and people will believe it, which sets up this claim made by Reagan against the Department of Energy.
The Department of Energy has a multi-billion-dollar budget in excess of $10 billion. It hasn't produced a quart of oil or a lump of coal or anything else in the line of energy.
Now, at that point, Jimmy Carter's mouth was probably hanging open. He wasn't on camera. But it's not just a straw man. It's a lie. The Department of Energy doesn't create energy. I mean, that's absurd, and Reagan knows it. The Department of Energy builds nuclear bombs. It's got a euphemistic name. Yes, it's got a $10 billion budget. It did back then, but it builds nuclear bombs. Oh, well, you can't. Reagan knew it was a great talking point, and he knew he had to be willing to say whatever it takes to win as long as he could say it sincerely. And that's what the billionaires who basically propped up Reagan and said, hey, here's a guy. He's an actor. He knows how to deliver a line. And he looks pretty. He's a good-looking guy. Mitt Romney, too. Mitt Romney lied about his own tax plan. He lied about the president's Medicare reforms. He lied about his own Medicare plans. He lied about Wall Street's reforms. He lied about the president's green energy investments. He lied about the death panels. He lied about small businesses. He lied about the deficit. He lied about the National Federation of Independent Businesses. He lied about cuts to the military. But you know what? Romney talks sincerely, just like Reagan. And that's why today he's being declared the winner of the debate instead of being declared the loser by virtue of lies. But the similarities don't end there. Romney is running to govern just like Reagan. Listen to this montage of Romney and then Reagan. Or is it Reagan and then Romney? It's Reagan, then Romney, Reagan, then Romney. If their voices sound similar, just notice this. Listen.
I think it has been evident in most of the answers that Mr. Carter has given tonight that he seeks the solution to anything
as another opportunity for a federal government program.
What we're seeing right now is, in my view, a trickle-down government approach, which has government thinking it can do a better job than free people pursuing their dreams, and it's not working.
I am suggesting that there are literally thousands of unnecessary regulations that invade every facet of business and indeed very much of our personal lives that are unnecessary.
And what's happened with some of the legislation that's been passed during the president's term, you've seen regulation become excessive, and it's hurt the economy.
Free enterprise can do a better job of producing the things that people need than government can.
Free people and free enterprises trying to find ways to do things better are able to be more effective in bringing down the cost than the government will ever be.
And that last one is the one that convinced me, you know, that's it. Okay, they studied the Reagan-Carter debate. In fact, there was a headline. I shared this story with you on, I think it was either Monday or Tuesday of this week. It was called the October Surprise is to Jimmy Carterize Barack Obama. This is before the Obama talking to a bunch of African-American preachers tape came out. And that they were going to try and Jimmy Carterize him. And everybody assumed that what that meant, I mean, the word had leaked out of the Romney camp that they were going to turn Obama into Jimmy Carter. Everybody assumed that they meant that they were going to do it with foreign policy, like Iran, you know, the hostages. Same thing with the four people who died in Libya. No, I don't think so. I think what they meant was we're going to go into the debates and we're going to do the same thing Reagan did to Jimmy Carter. Lie. I hope the president's people saw what I saw in that debate last night. I hope Jimmy Carter's fate is haunting them, because if the next few debates go the way this one went, then President Obama will be the next Jimmy Carter, a one-term president taken down by a serial liar funded by billionaires. And Mitt Romney's going to start, from the White House, start taking apart the New Deal and putting in new Supreme Court justices.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And that, my friends, could be the last nail in the coffin of the American middle dream, the American middle class and the American dream. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. And what's this phone is blinking at me. Announce calls. On our TV show tonight, The Big Picture, we're going to be taking live calls. Just a quick heads up. In fact, the phone number will be 202-904-2134, but that will be on the screen tonight. You will see it. So, and also, we will be giving away a free book today, a copy of Unequal Protection. Whichever caller, Shane, in his infinite wisdom or equally infinite capriciousness decides, yes, that's the one, is going to receive a free signed copy of my book, Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People and How You Can Fight Back. It's this free signed Unequal Protection sponsored by Stamps.com. That caller could be you. So, actually, let's just, like, get to the calls, huh? Okay, Bob in Chicago. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tom. I just got to say, there is something that's been driving me nuts, because nobody, even the supposed lefties, has brought up the quote that Mitt Romney said last night, and I'd like to read it to you.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the only person doing it is at Mitt Regular Guy, a parody account on Twitter, but he said, this was after Obama's talking, Mitt jumped in and said, I agree, where you put your money is where your heart's at. Now, do you know where he keeps his money? It's not in the United States of America, so his heart, I mean, this is such an easy super PAC ad.
That's are you looking at a transcript? Are you sure that he said
no.
That? Yeah, because
no,
I can't
remember
believe
him saying it was during a transition talking about the education
last
and
night.
Obama was talking about where he was putting his money, and Romney said, "I agree. Where you put your money is where your heart's at." Now, perhaps it's wrong. Like I said, I got it from that Regular Guy, a parody account, but I would look into this. Because I remember seeing it myself.
Okay, Shano is scouring the transcript right now. We will. Shane?
It's in a transition from right at the end of, it's right at the beginning of what Romney's saying after Obama was talking, and I believe it was about education.
Okay, hang on just a second, and we will play the clip for you, because Shane is.
This is why I got you. Another thing that nobody ever mentioned was that whole Libya statement he made. The whole thing got spun into, did he say it too soon? Was it too soon? and he's saying, oh, it was just about Egypt. But in the actual quote, it mentions the death in Benghazi. So he's obviously talking about that death in Libya, and right. nobody calls him on it.
Right. Well, last night was supposed to be about domestic policy, and
it
turned into everything about Mitt Romney's tax plans and Medicare and Obamacare and not much else. And I know there's a lot of groups from women to gay Americans to a variety of minorities, immigrants, African-Americans, who are going, huh? You know, this was domestic policy? And I think you can drop a lot of that in Jim Lehrer's lap. But
right. And I would say one other thing, that the quote you brought up about the boys earlier, I took that as meaning his boys were liars and we shouldn't
trust Mitt Romney's kids. But see, I don't think that a 65-year-old man refers to his five sons, the youngest of whom is 34 years old, as my boys. He refers to them as my sons, and particularly when you're focus grouping and carefully honing the zinger, the attack line that you're going to use to accuse the first African-American president of the United States of being a liar, you would in fact, this when I first heard it, I thought, I didn't hear that. He must have said sons. I didn't actually hear that.
But he is a Mr. Rogers type that talk, you know, I'm not criticizing Mormons, but it's sort of a so wholesome and stuff that maybe he talks like that. But I agree with you, because they did focus group everything for 2 months on this, so I bet you there wasn't a word misplaced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the call, Rob, Bob. Boy was intentional. It was absolutely intentional. Bill in Santa Monica. Hey, Bill, what's up?
This is Bill in Santa Maria.
Santa Maria. My apologies.
Tom, I thought that speech last night that Romney gave, his response to the $5 trillion tax cut, and don't worry about your Social Security, don't worry about your pension. He's given that speech hundreds of times. He's given it to takeover companies. He's told these people, I won't hurt your pension. I'm just coming in here to make this company better. That was Romney's speech, his takeover speech. Romney is Gordon Gekko, and that's what President Obama should tag him with. Romney is Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, well, and this is the fulfillment of, and Bill, thank you very much for the call. Here is how a previous president responded, and this was the election of 1944. This is how a previous president responded to Republican lies. Here's Franklin Roosevelt.
Let me warn you, and let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things. We believe in Social Security. We believe in work for the unemployed. We believe in saving homes. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things. But we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything.
There you go. I mean, it's just, RJ in Wendover, Nevada. Hey, RJ, what's up?
Yes, sir. That line came out, Tom, and as soon as I heard it.
Wait a second. What line are you talking about?
Oh, my boys.
Oh, boys, yes.
I knew absolutely he was doing that. I mean, anyone with any sensitivity in race relations would not even use that conversation, let alone in a debate with the president, who's the first African-American president.
Right.
When that came out, I said, he's calling the president that name.
Yeah, he's calling the president a boy. So you don't think I'm paranoid or crazy?
Absolutely
or
not. I was watching the debate in a Burger King. And I heard that, and I go, whoa. And I'll tell you what, if I tried to listen to the black radio stations, those people would pick it up right away, because they know when someone is dissing them.
Yeah.
And that was a diss, and it may not be caught by most of the people in this country. It wasn't caught by that Lehrer guy who was asleep.
Yeah.
I mean, he was abominable moderating that debate.
Well, he didn't moderate it. He just kind of hung around
I'll agree with the criticisms that the president was listless. And I'll tell you one thing. I was really feeling bad for the president. He looks like a guy who's just been I've been fighting every inch for 4 years.
Yeah. Well, Bob Woodward made the comment, and he said, I don't have this morning on television. I didn't see it. Louise told me about it. This is a secondhand paraphrase. But Bob Woodward, you know, the reporter, said he didn't have any evidence anything to back this up. But his personal opinion was that Obama's mind was someplace else, that there's some sort of crisis going on somewhere in the world that the president of the United States is having to deal with that has been that was distracting him, that he was distracted, that he was worried about. And
one quick thing, and I don't know if you noticed this. I don't know if Obama's had this. He's got a tick in his right cheek. It's really sad. I mean, I was going, is it
where he looked like he was smiling? I think he was actually grimacing. I think every time Romney told a lie, Obama would kind of clench his teeth and make what looked like a smile and write something down. And it looked like he was looking down and smiling when in fact he was doing neither. He was writing something down. He was making a note to himself. And, Mitt Romney was playing the I'm going to stare you down game. I am the alpha dog here. I'm the guy with the testosterone. And Mitt Romney never took his eyes off Obama, just constantly, bore holes in him. And you get those camera shots. You can see it better on C-SPAN than on the network feeds, over the shoulder shot of Romney over the shoulder of Obama. And Obama, when Obama was speaking, Romney would just be staring at him, and Obama would just occasionally look up at him. I mean, the stare was just so intense. It was very much I'm in the corporate boardroom. I'm the CEO. You're the boy here. And okay. RJ, thank you very much. Lisa in Overland, Ohio. Your thoughts on Romney's use of the word boy?
Well, first of all, I too bristled when I heard it. I'm not sure it was planned. I think his personality is just as you said, he's the boss and he's going to make sure everyone knows it. And it was so condescending to use that word. The look on his face, the smile that came to his lips when he said, my boys, it to me was just part of his personality, which has nothing to do with what either one of them were talking about.
But he had announced a week and a half ago that the biggest challenge he was going to have in the debate is that the president doesn't always tell the truth. And
why
so,
can't the president sue him for slander?
Because you can't sue public figures for slander or defamation. So
an oral statement of false maliciousness or defamatory nature tending to damage another's reputation.
Doesn't count against public figures.
Well, that's ridiculous. And Mr. Lehrer did a horrible job. It was like watching two preschoolers. One is the bully.
Yeah.
One's got the toy.
Yeah.
The other one's just trying to have someone maybe stand up for them because they know where it's going to go if they start fighting.
Well.
And he did nothing.
Yeah. I think early on, certainly, President Obama was waiting for Jim Lehrer to jump in. Thank you for the call, Lisa. And it didn't happen. And or to follow up or to say, Mr. Romney, you just said that what the president said is not true, that you want to cut $5 trillion in taxes. How much do you want to cut? And, the president didn't interrupt him to say, how much did you want to cut? We've been through that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So we're processing the debate of last night and trying to come to a better understanding of what happened and where it's going.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right.
So taking our country back one congressional district at a time, one of the most toxic Republicans, Tea Party, wackadoodle, crazy Republicans in the entire House of Representatives is Darrell Issa. Who's running against him? Jerry Tettleman. Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, 4-F-O-R, Congress2012.com is the website. And Jerry Tettleman is on the line with us. He's running for Congress in California's 49th district. You should check out his website, Jerry4Congress2012.com. Jerry Tettleman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
So tell me about your race against Darrell Issa.
Well, Tom, I'm running a good race. We have a very competitive race with the redistricting that has taken place. It used to be a more Republican district. Now it's more Democratic. So I probably have the best shot against Daryl Issa of anyone who's run against him in the past. So I'm running a, you know, have a couple offices. We got lots of volunteers and staff, and we're running a really a grassroots campaign, but we're running hard.
Great. And tell us, you know, what's your elevator speech? Why should people in California's 49th district vote for you, and why should people all over the United States go to juryforcongress2012.com and offer to help you or support you or share the word about you or tell their friends?
Well, you know, I offer quite an alternative vision to Daryl Issa. Daryl Issa has a very poor record on, you know, women's rights in particular. He was the one that held the contraception hearings that didn't have any women present. The Democrats walked out. He wouldn't allow Sandra Fluke to testify.
Mm-hmm.
My stand is I support a woman's right to choose. I support a woman's right for contraception. I think this is an important issue in this election. The other thing, of course, Daryl Issa is the chairman of the House Oversight Committee. He recently held Eric Holder in contempt of Congress. And to me, it was a very politicized move. It was described as a witch hunt. I think that a lot of what he's done as far as his investigations have been very political.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking out for the people's interest rather than special interest.
Okay. And people can learn more about your website, more about your run at Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y-F-O-R, for Congress2012.com. Got it? Is that right,
yeah,
Jerry?
Yeah, that's okay. Sure. That's it.
Okay.
Jerry,
okay. Jerry Tettleman, Tettleman. Check it out. By the way, you're a realtor and a former nurse. Do I have that right?
Yeah. My first occupation, I was a registered nurse. I did that for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and then last 22 years, I've been a realtor and real estate investor, and I've been a political activist for most of my adult life. And I was the president of Citizens for Global Solutions in California for a number of years. I wrote a book called One World Democracy, A Progressive Vision for Enforceable Global Law about international law.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been a political activist, helped other people's campaigns, but this is my first run for Congress.
Well, I wish you the very best, Jerry, and thanks a lot for being with us today.
Great.
Thanks for joining us. Back to your calls. Devon, am I saying that right, in Blacksburg, Virginia?
You got it, Tom. It's Devon in Blacksburg.
So what's
Tom,
up?
This is Southwest Virginia, and I got to tell you, you are spot on with that boy interpretation. There's just no other way to interpret it.
Do you agree? In other words, you agree with me that early on in the debate, when Mitt Romney said that he had five boys, not five sons, and that they didn't always tell the truth, and implying that that boy on the other side of the stage wouldn't tell the truth, that he was he was throwing that word at the first African American president of the United States.
Yes, sir. Emmett Till, who was visiting the South from Chicago, had never been referred to as a boy. But when he was called a boy, he knew, oh, gee, maybe I do need to be a little concerned. So, yeah, it's not in your mind. It's reality.
Yeah.
And as much as I loved the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour, Jim, it's time to go home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know who chooses the moderators, but there are so many young, intelligent, sharp news people, Rachel Maddow comes to mind, who would do a much better job.
Well, this is a tough time. I think that, I think it was a mistake. I agree with you. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Clyde in Chicago. Hey, Clyde, what's up? No, Clyde. Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Hey, Nick, what's up? Thanks for listening to WBRL.
Hi, jives with what you're talking about with the boy remark. I think that the Romney strategy underlying the whole debate was to throw out lie after lie and offensive comment and, you know, zingers, so to speak, over and over and over with the intention of getting a rise out of Obama. Ideally, what they wanted was to get him to get angry. Then he would fall into the angry black man, trope.
Mm.
And I think that that was their underlying strategy all across the board. And they had a list of more and more and more and more and more outrageous things that they could go to to get that result. Obama's strategy, in my opinion, that accounts for his behavior, was that he was directed by the people who concocted his strategy, that under no circumstances can you let him get to you. We want you to maintain your likability quotient. You will not rise up in any way whatsoever. Let him punch himself out with all these insults, the moderator will eventually step in and he'll look like a terrible bully. And because Obama was bound and determined to stick to his strategy as it was conceived, mm-hmm. and then you have the perverse confluence of Lair not really doing his job. Right. And I think that after 20, 30 minutes of this, it dawned on Obama on some level, oh, my God, this is a disaster. And you just get, like, fried. And
right.
I think, I think that kind of thing was going on. He's out of shape for this kind of interaction. And he may have had other things going on behind the scenes. But I think that's the dynamic. And I think that, I mean, obviously, on an intellectual, academic level, if you read a transcript, Obama wins, especially when you take into account this guy's lying. But the Republican strategy, Tom, is they understand that there were like between 50, maybe 55 million people watching who don't follow this stuff like you and us and we do all the time, and they're not going to read the fact-checker stuff.
Right.
And that impression stays put. What Obama has to do, this is the most important part of my call, please let me finish this, what Obama has to do, in my humble opinion, is wait a few days to get everything together, then call a press conference, answer all the questions about the lies, and accuse Mitt Romney and the Republicans of doing a dastardly thing at this debate, and paint Mitt Romney as the Bernie Madoff of politics.
The Bernie Madoff of politics. I love it. A great phrase, Nick. We'll see how it plays out. I hope they take your advice. Thank you very much for the call. And thanks for listening to the show.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're deconstructing, analyzing, trying to understand, looking at, trying to figure out what happened last night, what, why, how, who. By the way, this is probably the most, and tip of the hat again to the caller who called in about this, probably the most under-noticed Romney soundbite from last night. Here you go.
You make a very good point, which is that the place you put your money just makes a pretty clear indication of where your heart is.
Right. I want to hear that one more time, Shana.
You make a very good point, which is that the place you put your money just makes a pretty clear indication of where your heart is.
And so 500 pages devoted in your tax return to your offshore accounts? Really? And you want to be president? Really? Steve in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Steve, you disagree with my thought that Romney used the word boy rather than the word son intentionally?
Yeah, look, I mean, I can't stand Romney. I think he's disgusting, and there's no way I would ever vote for anyone like him. So we'll get that out of the way. But
maybe,
I really
maybe
think
not.
The whole... Well,
I mean, the Republicans who call into this show and the people who are paid to call into this show always say that kind of thing.
Well,
but what's your logic, regardless of your politics?
I think the racial argument, it sounds like desperation. He never called Obama a boy. What he was trying to do is the same old Republican crap of just trying to sound like a family man. He didn't want to sound like somebody whose kids were all grown and he's out of touch. So he was trying to sound like a good old,
his youngest son is 34 years old.
Well, that's right. He was trying to sound like something he's not, which is typically, that's typical Romney.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I call my 3-year-old boy all the time, out in public. And I have biracial relatives.
When my son was 6, I called it, when he was a little kid, I'd say, yeah, that's my boy. I mean, proudly. But, what was that TV show? Where's that music, Shano? It's right here. Here it is. Is that my 3 boys? Steve?
Yeah, I'm well aware of it. I've actually seen old reruns of it. I'm a lot younger than you.
It was my 3 sons.
But,
I mean, you would, if you're preparing a line, and make no mistake about it, Steve, these guys, a group of people in the Romney campaign, spent hours planning that line. That line was memorized. That line was rehearsed. Because that was the line in which he was calling the President of the United States a liar. That was the line that a week and a half ago, Romney, in an interview, in fact, we've got the clip around here. Do you know where it is? It's from yesterday. It was clip number 1. Romney admits challenges dealing with Obama because he says things that aren't true. You want to play that?
But I think the challenge that I'll have in the debate is that the president tends to, how shall I say it, say things that aren't true. And in attacking his opponents, I've looked at prior debates, and in that kind of case, it's difficult to say, well, am I going to spend my time correcting things that aren't quite accurate, or am I going to spend my time talking about the things I want to talk about? And
see, I think that he was not he was
but I just think
he was a saying he's going to he was a saying that he was going to call the president a liar. In fact, he called the president a liar, and then B, he lied 27 times in 38 minutes. And so, you know, this is the classic strategy of attacking the other person for what you yourself are going to do or are going to do and or are doing. Richard in Chicago. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
Good. It's on your mind.
You do great work. I've been listening to CPT in Chicago most of the day in the midst of working and trying to get my stomach back in order from last night's debate. But you've had some great callers. The lady from Michigan, who is referred to herself as being Catholic, and all that, really kind of touched me because I think what happened, and I'll share this with you, I'm African American in Chicago and a big supporter of President Obama. One of the things that happened last night is that there was sort of an option A, option B. Do we go for the juggler now and put this guy down, or do we see what happens and adjust as we go along? And the latter is what happened, and unfortunately the debate format with Jim Lehrer's style didn't allow for the traditional back and forth with a little bit of guidance in the middle from the moderator.
Right.
So option A, I think a lot of people, like the lady in Michigan, wanted to see. They wanted to see President Obama be presidential, but go for the juggler, and I believe he could have done that last night by just saying to Mitt Romney, listen, what you've said, you've made this comment three or four times, whatever the topic was, whether it be the economy or Medicare or whatever, and said, but you haven't said anything. So as president, I need you to explain that to the American people because you aren't giving us anything that's detailed or substantive. And those are the kinds of things that it seems like a lot of people wanted the president to do and still remain presidential. But, you know, it's the first debate and a lot will happen, and I can appreciate your observation about the boy comment because when Mitt Romney said it, there's two things that went through my mind. The first one was, why would you refer to your grown sons, and I know all of his sons are adults, as my boys. I get the, you know, there was a little bit of a touch there of, I've got an African-American president on the stage with me, and this is my opportunity to send a message to my base that I'm willing to go there and say the word boy.
Right.
And he did it, and frankly, you know, masterfully, if you want to call it that, because a lot of people probably didn't pick up on it, but the base did.
Yep.
So I'm with you on where that.
And I think the president did too. I think it probably, you know, I think that one of the goals was to call President Obama a liar. One of the goals was to call him a boy. One of the goals was to knock him off balance, to radically insult him. That and in a way that if the president responded, then it would look like he was being racially hypersensitive.
Without a doubt. And I've talked to a handful of folks here in Chicago that are strong Obama supporters, and we've all kind of come to the same agreement that the president was prepared, but he wasn't prepared for Romney to come at him in an insulting way, which is different than, you know, in a true debate format. He
right.
tried to insult the president and see if he could get him off his mark. He didn't by getting the president to take the bait,
right.
but the president was kind of stifled as a result of that. Now, I'll give you one other thing that, you know, maybe some of your other viewers have thought but haven't been able to get through to talk to you about. What's interesting about how this is all playing out is that, you know, everybody is kind of taking sides about how the president did, what he should have done, what he could have done, and how Romney was. Romney's out of gas now because he has nothing new to say on the economy.
Right.
He did spill all of his beans, that which, you know, are probably light in the first place. And I would hope that the president's team of people will sit him down and say, listen, okay, everything's out there now. And in the next debate, this is a strategic move that I would advise him to try. And I heard Dr. Dyson say this on Ed's show earlier. If the president is willing to say, okay, I can still immerse my economic, my Medicare, my Social Security, my gender issues into the next debate by simply talking about it from a national security perspective.
Sure.
And he can pivot on one of the big, and he has to do it before Romney does, because my instincts tell me that Romney's people are going to tell him to do this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what the strategy that the Obama camp is employing, and I think that this was planned this way. I do think that they expected a moderator to actually intervene from time to time. But they've got an ad running right now that just calls Romney out on the lies. And
I think the press conference idea, was that you or the other caller? I think that could be a very powerful thing to do.
Yeah, except you can't do it with a presidential press conference, because you can't do politics, you know, from the White House. But you know, on the stump, you know, start making that part of your canned stump speech. Just, you know, a couple of sound bites like, you know, why won't you answer this question? Why won't you answer? Oh, you said your money is where your heart is. Why is your money in the Cayman Islands? You said you're not going to cut $5 trillion in taxes. Well, how much are you going to cut? You said, you know, those kind of things. Yeah, I'm with you, Richard. Thank you a lot. Thank you very much for the call. I will play a clip from the new Obama ad when we come back, so you can get a sense of how they're responding. But clearly their game plan is that, you know, over the next little bit. In fact, actually, we'll talk with Joe Biden's son, Beau Biden, the Attorney General of Delaware, at the bottom of the hour about this, their game plan.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Which is to say, okay, that happened, and here's all the lies that this guy told. Let's play the Truth Squad now.
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
Paleoanthropology. Yeah, welcome back. Our geeky science moment. Just a minute or two here to share with you my favorite science story of the week. This is what the Earth sounds like. NASA on Monday released what they say is the clearest recording yet of what they call the CORUS. This is the Van Allen radiation belt, the radiation belt that surrounds the Earth that is responsible for the northern lights and things like that. This is what it sounds like from outer space. Isn't that incredible? It reminds me of whales singing to each other. In fact, we should get a clip of whales singing and just compare them. You know, it's did whales learn to sing from the Van Allen radiation belts? It's just incredible. And how do they know what the Earth sounds like from outer space? Huh. Anyhow, welcome back. Barry in Chicago. Hey, Barry, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. You know, it was kind of a disappointing night last night, to say the least, but the culmination of it all was having Mitt Romney standing in front of the Constitution, a man who has devastated thousands of American families, shipped thousands of jobs overseas, harvested companies, and leaving workers in the dirt, telling us about freedom, standing in front of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And that so many people believe him. You know, that's the state that America's in right now, and it's very, very sad and tragic.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Barry, thank you for the call. Kathleen in Dixon, California. Kathleen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kathleen.
Let me take you off speakerphone.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
It's quite all right.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm calling today because your question at the beginning of You Need to Know This,
mm-hmm,
is how can a presidential campaign, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, how can a presidential debate be a debate when 27 lies were told in 38 minutes?
Right.
Something to that effect. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. And at the same time, a while back, about 4 months ago probably, when you were asking the question is about Obama taking a side.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in strong, I think it was in the chat room, and I said he needs to pick a side. And I would kind of agree with Bob Woodward that I thought something, a crisis has happened in the world that Obama's thinking about. But more when I think about it, I think that Obama likes to take the high road if he can,
mm-hmm,
which we all would like to. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the high road is calling a liar a liar.
Well, on those rare occasions when he has used strong language, like he used the word damn once, and what was the headline on Drudge? Obama goes street with a very darkened picture of him. I mean, it's just this is what happens. I mean, he's dealing with dynamics that no other president in the history of this country has had to deal with, being the first African American president.
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm going to listen first.
I'm done.
No, I completely agree with you. On the flip side of that, in my opinion, hopefully, I may be a wackadoodle. At the same time, I think that there's enough percentage of the American public that is aware, that is and ready for somebody that comes out and brings, if you, I don't, in the moment I'm going to say bring it to the street,
mm-hmm.
because even the 99% is not completely illiterate or illiterate.
Yeah.
They're at least street smart to the certain issues that affect them.
Part of their apathy comes from
somebody who feels that they have to play the political game.
Yeah. And
while I understand surviving that, because, and this is nothing in comparison to what the big boys play, but I did run for office and won on a writing candidacy as a president and vice president at a community college level. Yeah.
Kathleen, thank you for your comments. I'll just leave it at that. John in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? I just had a few things I was thinking about. I want to say I do agree with you on your analysis about the term boy. That said, I know a lot of people probably do agree with that. I was thinking on the issue of Reagan. You said that it sounds an awful lot like the 1980 debate with Carter was studied and broken down. And I got to thinking, I'll bet you they must have studied Lair
of course.
Over the years.
Of course.
And to kind of take a look at him to see what his weaknesses were.
Mm-hmm. Right. And how far can you push him? And how do you bully him? And what's the line that you're going to use on Lair? Well, I like Big Bird, too, but, Jim, I'm going to take away your subsidies. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a shot just as well as my boys. That was also a shot to Jim Lair as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting, too, is that maybe Romney felt a little bit threatened at the idea that Lair was there because he was thinking, this is an irony. Here I'm talking about cutting, funding to public television, and now here's Jim Lair.
No, it's the other way around. He talked about cutting funding to public television, which is 0.0001% of the federal budget. It's irrelevant.
Correct.
Right? He talked about cutting that because Jim Lair was there.
It was
simply his way of calling out to the base and saying, I don't like government supporting anything, including Big Bird. This has been a lot of talk. This was a shout out to the base. And Jim Lair was the foil. Jim Lair was what Alfred Hitchcock used to call the MacGuffin, the plot device, the box in Strangers on a Train or whatever that movie was, Maltese Falcon or something, where everybody was killing each other over the box and you never did find out what the box was. It was just the MacGuffin. Jim Lair was the useful idiot for that comment, shall we say? Although I don't mean to be, that sounds pretty disrespectful of Jim McLair. Jim Lair, I thought he did a poor job last night, but I don't want to totally trash him. We'll be back 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So your thoughts, my thoughts, the news of the day. By the way, 19 states will not have exit polls this year. The networks just canceled them. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Attorney General for the great state of Delaware and son of the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, Beau Biden, is on the line with us. BeauBiden.com is his website. And General Biden, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back on with you, Tom.
And also on behalf of the Barack Obama campaign, BarackObama.com. I got to tell you, though, over at BeauBiden.com, that is the one of the best family pictures I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I'm a lucky dad and a husband, so we got two good kids.
It is so sweet. Anyhow, we as you can imagine, for the last hour and a half, I've been taking calls. We've been talking about what happened in the debates last night. I'm curious your take on it.
Well, look, I thought the president did well, and what I was happy to see last night is two things kind of popped out at me. One, beyond a shadow of a doubt now, you have, Mitt Romney, fully embracing the voucherization of Medicare, which I think is very important to paint the very stark contrast that we've known has existed since the beginning of this general election and is a very clear choice that, you know, everyone from Florida to Iowa has to make as it relates to who will better protect and defend Medicare as we know it. And the choice is clear on that. You have two very different paths. And Governor Romney was fully embracing of the voucherization of the Medicare.
You're right.
Of Medicare for the cost of, $6,000 to seniors who, would be, under Medicare under his plan. So, that was a positive development among several. The other one was, as clear and kind of candid as he was about Medicare, he was the opposite of that as it relates to his tax plan. I mean, it was stunning to me to hear him walk away from or try to disavow or act as if it was a surprise to him that for the last many months, including during his primary, that he was embracing what amounts to nearly a $5 trillion tax cut, independent taxes, outfits, independent organizations out there estimated that it's a $4.8 to $5 trillion tax cut over the next 10 years.
Yeah, he's not been ambiguous
about this. He acted like he was surprised to hear that was something that was associated with him.
Yeah, I mean, he has not been ambiguous about this. He's just, yes, 20% right across the board. We're going to cut everybody's taxes by 20%. Well, you add all that up, and over a 10-year period, that's $5 trillion. That's arithmetic. To paraphrase Bill Clinton being paraphrased by Barack Obama.
Yeah, no, it's just, and so that was, the candor on one side and the lack of candor on the other side. It now reminds me of what people have talked about with Governor Romney in terms of his primary opponents and about him being a flip-flopping on it, whether it be his former primary opponents or his primary opponents in 2008 or his general election opponent in 2002 or his race against Ted Kennedy so many years ago. I mean,
right.
he kind of played back to the old type of what he was known for in terms of, not being wedded to any one policy in any given day.
We're talking with Beau Biden, the Attorney General for the great state of Delaware. And General Biden, I'm curious your thoughts on, I mean, Mitt Romney came out with knives drawn. I mean, to the point of calling the president of the United States a liar and a boy. And I was just astounded by that. I've had no shortage. I mean, just half the callers who've called into this program so far have been, did he really use the word boy? And referring to the president. And just some stunning stuff. And President Obama held his equanimity, his composure, quite well through all that. Was there, do you have any idea if there was, if the campaign plan was to let the moderator deal with that kind of misbehavior on the part of Romney, or was it to have President Obama be more presidential? I mean, what was the strategy here? Do you know?
I honestly don't know, Tom. I'm not in those rooms and during those discussions. And as you know me well enough. Now, even if I was, I'm not. I let you all cover the kind of behind the curtain piece of it. And
yeah.
But from my point of view, sitting there with my wife watching it last night, I mean, the president is the president. He was presidential, and he was articulating his vision for the country for the next 4 years going forward. And, you know, he showed some real strength there with the dishonest statements that Governor Romney made, not just about Governor Romney's stated positions over the course of the last 12 months, but dishonest assessments and representations of the president's policies.
Yes.
And so you know, this is one debate. We got total three more, as you know. I'm looking forward to the debate on October 11th with Representative Ryan and my father. My father's working very hard to prepare for it, just like he did in the debate against Sarah Palin. Mm. He's studying up. He's methodically preparing for it. And Paul Ryan is an expert in his budget, the budget, domestic policy. And so he's working hard to be prepared.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. I was at a dinner that your dad was at, and you know, where he kind of came around and worked the room, and he is one of the best retail politicians I've ever in my entire life met. Him, I think he's right up there with Bill Clinton. He's a very very smart man.
Well, you know, first of all, thank you. He's a bright man. He's working hard to get prepared for this debate. But one of the things that makes a person like that, you didn't ask me this, but since you raised it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people see authenticity, and
yes.
you saw this for a long time, and been on the airwaves about it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, authentic people that like people, that enjoy being with people, that's what you see come through with our ticket, and with the president, with my dad, and obviously with President Clinton. You know, the good news is my father is the same person he is when he's talking to a prime minister. As he is, he's talking to a person in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, or you know, Tallahassee, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He's people know he is who he is wherever he is.
Yeah, and I think you could say that is true as well of President Obama. That the President Obama that we have been watching now, ever since he was Senator Obama and first came on the national stage, has been quite consistent in by and large in his political positions and in his temperament. And Mitt Romney has been all over the map, and I'm just wondering how we all should respond to 27 lies in 38 minutes. I mean, this Mitt Romney spoke for 38 minutes last night, and Center for American Progress has documented 27 myths that Romney told. That's the nice word. Go ahead.
Look, I've been through a bunch of campaigns, the last 30 days, the last 33 days, it's about just like the events I've been doing in New Hampshire today.
Mm-hmm.
Going town to town, door to door, shopping center to shopping center, diner to diner, and articulating our side's vision, the ticket's vision, Obama Biden's vision. Mm-hmm. For the next 4 years.
Right.
And, you know, we have, the president has the most
Attorney General Biden, your cell phone is fading out on us. I'm very sorry, but we've almost completely, in fact, I have completely lost you. I'm sorry. I'll drop it on hold, and maybe Danielle can, Danielle, line 11. There we go. Can say hi, but anyway, thank you so much for being with us. And oh, he is back. Is his cell phone? Your phone is working now.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry, I was going through an underpass there.
Oh, okay, that's fine. We just have about a minute left. Anyway, you were wrapping up.
The bottom line is, in the last 33 days of the campaign, it's about going door to door, and you know, we have now over 100 offices and field offices in Ohio. We have field offices all over New Hampshire, all over the state of Florida. We have more field offices in Ohio, Tom, than we did in the 2008 campaign. You got energetic young people, old people, everything in between, working the phones every night, working day and day. Early voting has begun. Early voting began in Ohio on October 2nd. Early voting has begun in many states across the country. And Iowa last week, people are at the polls, going to the polls, and getting people to the polls and getting up to vote. The whole ballgame here.
Yeah, and that's what we all need to be doing. Is we need to be focusing on the ground game, as it were, and making this thing happen.
Yeah, I mean, the one website that I would recommend anybody go to is gottavote.com, gottavote.com, and it will show anybody who logs into that where and what time and when you can go vote and where your polling place is and how to register.
Is that gottavote.com?
Exactly right.
Gottavote.com. I'm going to have to check that out. That makes it easier, helps people figure it out, and helps them get to the polls. Attorney General for Delaware, for the great state of Delaware, Beau Biden. His website, BeauBiden.com. The Barack Obama campaign, of course, BarackObama.com. And GottaVote.com. That's a great one. General Biden, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Great talking with you. And look forward to doing it again. We will be back with more of your thoughts, my thoughts. And actually, at the top of the next hour, Senator Sherrod Brown is going to drop by.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So what happened last night? Was it a... Oh, there's a great joke over at Democratic Underground I got to share with you that has to do with Pinocchio. Now what do you think?
Every time I read the news, I'm always more confused.
Well, let's deconfuse that by checking out the news. Our Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, to sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman, an issue that should have been brought up last night in the domestic policy debate. You can go to Don Siegelman, I-before-E.org. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, live from New York City. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Richard Kim of The Nation actually did something that a lot of people haven't done, which is they went after Jim Lehrer. And they basically said, why didn't he ask about pay equity, immigration, reproductive rights, climate change, any of those kinds of issues? He just didn't deal with it.
Right. And why did, when Mitt Romney refused to answer questions or prevaricated, on things like, you know, he repeatedly, oh, I'm not going to cut $5 trillion in taxes. Why didn't the moderator then jump in and say, well, what are you going to do?
Well, you know, it is interesting because, exactly, a lot of people have criticized Obama's performance, but how come nobody has criticized the fact that Jim Lehrer did not hold the feet to the fire?
Yeah, I think there's a fair amount of criticism of Jim Lehrer, but, yeah.
Not a lot in the mainstream media.
Oh, really?
In our kind of media, but
yeah.
Okay. A couple interesting things just on the debate before I get into some other stuff, which is public broadcasting hit back on the Big Bird issue of Romney yesterday, and they said they put out a press release basically, and they said that 1/100 of 1% of the federal budget goes to public broadcasting, and what is interesting because they didn't use any quotes in it. But Patricia Harrison was vice chair of the Republican Party in the late 90s when Bush II was elected, and she was appointed to PBS, and then the Democrats really sort of reappointed her, reelected her at PBS, and that's who is running public broadcasting system, a well-known Republican.
And she's the one who spoke out against, is she not, the one who spoke out against Mitt Romney talking about defunding PBS?
Yes.
Wow. Cool. I didn't realize that.
You know, it was interesting. The press release didn't quote her, but it would have never happened if she didn't give her stamp of approval on it.
Oh, of course. Of course. Interesting. Okay.
So that's interesting. Also, as you know, the Romney campaign was very critical. Today, Ben LeBolt was on a press conference call, as were other Obama people. And they said that they're going to devote their time to making sure that every voter understands positions Mitt Romney danced around. And then they produced an ad. If we can't trust him here, how could we ever trust him
here?
And the first is, of course, on the debate stage, and the second is in the Oval Office.
Right. And then a good ad. And then it's going to be very, very interesting to see how, you know, people say, well, you know, everybody was watching the debate, but they don't watch everything else. But, you know, with ad buys these days, TV ad buys, if they put enough money and they do enough saturation, you may actually have more people see the ad than saw the debate.
That is for sure. And by the way, voters can still register in all 50 states. Idaho, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming have early voting.
Yeah. So get out there, get registered, and get ready to vote, or vote if you can.
That's right. A couple other, well, there's a lot of interesting issues going on. Actually, Secretary of Transportation Roy LaHood, who is, of course, a Republican, Janet Napolitano, got together with Amtrak. They are going to train all 20,000 Amtrak people to look for human trafficking. They have trained flight crews. They say that it is a hidden crime that often shows up. And they're going to be dealing with that. Also, by the way, the president was in Denver today. He gave a long, lengthy rebuttal, really. He said, I met this spirited fellow last night who claimed to be Mitt Romney. He couldn't have been Mitt Romney. The real Mitt Romney has been running around the country for the last year promising $5 trillion in tax cuts to favor the wealthy.
Wow.
And so that happened. A couple other interesting things that just came out today, Tom. One is there is a revival in the housing market. Four more markets were added to the National Association of Home Builders Index of Improving Housing Market. It brings the list to 103 housing markets across the country that have actually improved their housing. Employment. 30% of the nation's manufacturing and service sector companies plan to hire workers in October. This is a report from the Society of Human Resource Management, and they always do these month-ahead hiring expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and of course we're going to get a job reports tomorrow, looks at past month hiring trends. This looks into the future.
Wow, that's great. I'm curious, Ellen.
Consumers are paying their bills. Consumer delinquencies on bank credit cards continued to decline in the second quarter, the lowest level since 2001. That's the American Bankers Association. So there is a lot of positive things that are going on.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're not going to hear that from the Mitt Romney campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like it. By the way, did you catch the Washington Post article about how the Associated Press and the news networks, this was confirmed by ABC News, that they're canceling the exit polls in 19 states this year?
I saw that.
That's incredible. Only
and
31
why?
States? How are we supposed to know what happened?
It's and why people decided to vote the way they voted.
Yeah.
It is quite astounding. By the way, one other thing, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said that they closed 18,000 illegal pharmacy websites and they seized about $10 million worth of pharmaceuticals. These are people trying to sell the American people drugs, and, of course, there's no quality control on that.
Wow. Yeah, and a lot of those are not what they say they are, or they're, you know, dangerous or whatever. So.
And how they're manufactured. I mean, we know that there was this manufacturing problem with people who were getting shots of cortisone.
Right. Yeah, it could be that you're getting a sugar pill. It could be that you're getting poison. It could be that you're getting, what was that, melamine, the stuff that killed the dog food things. I mean,
exactly.
Who knows? Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at donsiegelman.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Senator Sherrod Brown on the line with us, running for re-election as United States Senator in the great state of Ohio. And his website is sherrodbrown.com and, of course, brown.senate.gov. Senator Brown, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back. Thank you, always.
I'm curious your thoughts on last night's debate.
Well, I wish the president had been more aggressive. I think that when you're something about being president of the United States, not a lot of people talk back to you much, and all of a sudden he's standing on a stage, a sort of a barren stage, and he's got to go in front of 40 million people. He's got a guy barking at him, and I think he wasn't quite ready. I mean,
yeah.
I think he's you know, he's smart, he's a good debater, he knows the issues, but he's going to have to be more aggressive. He didn't bring up things like Mitch McConnell saying he wanted to defeat him. That was his number one goal. He didn't bring up the 47%. He didn't bring up some of the things to go right at Romney. And I think he'll be ready better next time. And that's wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. I think that Romney took a bunch of new positions. All of a sudden, he's not for tax cuts for the rich. Boy, I thought he was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no $5 trillion tax cut plan, no.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Where'd you get that? So the moderator didn't do his job to step up there, but the president, if the moderator doesn't, the president's got to be more aggressive, and I think the president was a little surprised by that, but he'll be ready the next time, and wasn't a lot of damage. Romney was better than people thought he would be, and the president probably wasn't as strong as he normally could be, so I wasn't thrilled about it, but he'll be ready next time, and we're going to keep doing the grassroots level efforts in Ohio that are going to win this election for the president and for the Senate.
And it's the issues, to paraphrase Bill Clinton, it's the issues, stupid. I mean, we have to be pointing out what is going on in this country, the crisis of the middle class, the 32 years of Reaganomics and Bushonomics in particular on hyperdrive, on steroids, have, the devastation that it has wreaked on this country.
Yeah, you look at where we've fallen behind on infrastructure, everything from medical research to broadband to our airports to our highways and bridges and public transit to community colleges, and we haven't invested, we were the envy of the world in the late 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, into the 80s, and now then we were sort of taken over by this tax cuts at all costs, shrink government, and the foundation of our society is not as solid as it was 30 years ago in that way, and that's what we have to focus on as a nation in the years ahead, and it's cost us so much middle class security, and that's what's so disturbing. That's one reason wages are down, and one reason the job growth's not what it should be.
Yeah, you look at the reports that show that had productivity since Ronald Reagan's presidency till today, had the increase in productivity, which has been fairly linear for basically since the Great Depression, had that productivity increase been matched by a wage increase, which it was from the 1930s until 1981, basically, and then wages started flattening out under, when Reagan declared war on working people. Had average working people's wages not flattened out, average household income in the United States or median household income in the United States today, instead of being in the neighborhood of $45,000 to $50,000, would be around $92,000.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's what's so troubling. You can see starting in the late 70s, early 80s, as you said, just a decoupling in productivity went up, profits went up, wages didn't. And then starting in 2000, wages really went flat.
Yeah.
It's partly globalization, partly it's lack of unions, partly it's this view of you don't do infrastructure and build the country sort of from the bottom up.
Yeah. So how do we there wasn't even a good conversation about that last night, frankly, about the need to rebuild, about the difference between an expense and an investment, for example. This was so trash during the Reagan administration, just the concept that, Americans used to understand that, if you built a school and it cost you $5 million to build, you'd get $50 million back during the lifetime of that school and added tax revenue from those people being educated.
Yeah.
Well, how did we lose that, Senator Brown?
I think that's a good question. I think we lost it because we look at all spending as the same. We look to spend. I mean, it's that I think far too many politicians play into this. Just all spending is a drain on the economy when, in fact, investing in the future means everything. I mean, we don't have enough people in government and, frankly, on radio like you who defend the role of government, who defend that, Medicare lifted people out of poverty. The fact is people get to know their grandchildren a lot better. The Margaret Mead line is a wonderful line, that wisdom and knowledge are passed from grandparent to grandchild. And people get to know their grandparents. Unless they move away, they get to know their grandchildren today much more likely than 50 years ago because of Social Security and Medicare in part. I mean, partly medical advances, but largely that people live longer, healthier lives. That kind of government spending for safe drinking water and clean air and bridges and community colleges and medical research really matter for our country. And we don't hear a very vigorous defense for the right kind of government spending very often at all. And as a result, we lose these arguments too often. Fundamentally, when you give that argument away, that government is by necessity not a good thing, by definition.
Right. I'm curious your thoughts on the Republican voter suppression efforts. And before we get into that, have I played for you before this little 20-second clip of Paul Weyrich?
You have not, but I've heard. I mean, I've heard it either on your show or I've heard it. But play it again. It's
okay.
So good.
This tells
you everything.
Yeah, this is the co-founder of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which has proposed all these laws. And the co-founder of the Heritage Foundation and a number of other organizations back in 1980 when he was working on the Reagan campaign, Paul Weyrich.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Are you seeing in Ohio this kind of voter suppression that the Republicans have been so aggressively and, frankly, nakedly engaging in around the country?
Yeah, let me one comment first. The beginning of our country, back when you had to be a Protestant male white landowner
that's right.
to vote, those days, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
well,
he was onto something, wasn't
that's
he?
What he wants to take us back to, apparently.
Yeah. They're trying. I mean, they do voter suppression every election. I mean, they've done it by calling into the black community on election day and said, you don't have to vote now, the election's already over, the election day's been changed, or if you've paid, if you've got a parking ticket outstanding, you can't vote. They do all that stuff. But this year, it's more from the top down. It's the secretaries of state and the governors and the legislatures that do this all over the country, in part directed, as you point out, by ALEC. What they're doing in Ohio is not as egregious because we stopped it with a ballot initiative, but to sort of freeze the old law in place. But they're still trying, and they're still they've shortened voting hours. But you know I look at it this way, that we know how to fight back. We don't have the early voting in Ohio is early, but it's not as early as it was before the Republican. I mean, it's not as many days as it was, but we're also better organized. We have a week, or we're in the midst right now of a week. This was written by a Republican legislature back before they started this kind of systemic voter suppression. For a week, you can register and vote on the same trip to the Board of Elections in every county in the state for 1 week, start until October 9th. So anybody listening, can 18 years old or 28 or whatever and never voted, you can go in, register, and vote the same day. We're taking advantage of that. We had higher first day early voting on Tuesday in the biggest, I think, five of the six largest counties in Ohio, significantly higher than 4 years ago. So we're ready. We're organized. My campaign, and you mentioned that at the beginning, at SherrodBrown.com, we're organizing with the president's campaign. We've got 65 full-time organizers, paid organizers. The president's got 300 to organize voter registration. No state in the country is as far along on that as we are. So we're taking the rules the way they are. We'd like them to be better, but we're working around them. They're still better than they were 10 years ago because they expanded them, and then they started to shrink them again. But we just have to work around it, and that's I'm not going to sit and complain about what they did to us with restricting voting because it's too important.
Yeah. Well said. Senator Sherrod Brown, SherrodBrown.com, of course, the website. Senator, thank you so much for being with us today.
Tom, thank you very much.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
You're one of America's great fighters. We'll be back with your thoughts, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And did you know that we have a Tom Hartman iPhone, iPad app? It's free. You can watch the show. You can listen to the show. You can participate in the message boards. It's all at TomHartman.com. President Obama, thank goodness, somebody's finally getting tough on Big Bird. Right. You know, one of the things I'm not finding as I skip through all the progressive websites, I'm not finding anybody going off on President Obama, excuse me, on Mitt Romney talking about, you know, with what was obviously a well-rehearsed line, talking about what you would think would be the word that this music should evoke, right? The about my sons, right? I have one son. In the TV show, is three sons. He's got five sons. The youngest is 34 years old. I mean, you would call them sons, right? But here is what Mitt Romney actually said last night. Clip
Look,
number
I got
12.
Five boys. I'm used
boys?
To people saying something that's not always true, but just keep on repeating it and ultimately hoping I'll believe it.
And then, you know, the obvious implicit message there, subtext of that, is that the president is a liar. And I just find it amazing. I just find it amazing. Now, there was, hang on just a second here. The joke. I promised you earlier a joke that is over at Democratic Underground. Snow White, Superman, and Pinocchio are walking along. This is Rose Levy posted this over at DU, democraticunderground.com. Snow White, Superman, and Pinocchio are walking along. They see a sign, contest for world's most beautiful woman. Snow White walks in, walks out with a smile and a tiara. They walk along and see another sign, contest for the world's strongest man. Superman goes in, comes out smiling, wearing the giant belt. And they walk along and they keep going. They see a sign, contest for the world's greatest liar. Pinocchio goes in, and later he comes out with his head down, crying. Pinocchio sobs, "Who the hell is Mitt Romney?" Okay, Danielle thought it was funny. All righty, but my point is that this went off for me last night, and it was like, whoa, what? You know, he's calling the president a boy, and now, and then in addition to that, this was on Mediaite. Let me get over there. In fact, I think I had left the site. I want to get this quote right. And this was John Sununu. In fact, you have the clip, Sean or Shane? Here's the clip. This is John Sununu on MSNBC today. He's one of the official spokespeople for Mitt Romney, who last night called the president a boy. And here's Sununu following up today. Now, keep in mind, this is all 2 days after Sean Hannity breathlessly pointed out to us all that the president can, is African-American and can kind of talk that way. Here is Sununu this morning.
To the Romney campaign. Well, Governor, I know you're not going to be shy. So how did you think he did? And are you pleased by the performance? He's gotten rave reviews almost universally.
Andrea, what people saw last night, I think, was a president that revealed his incompetence, how lazy and detached he is, and how he has absolutely no...
And keep going if you
idea
want.
How serious the economic problems of the country are and how he has failed to even begin to address them. And I think even the liberal press reacted with shock at this revelation. And I find it fascinating now this morning after they've slept to watch them all scrambling around to clean up the mess the president left on the floor last night. On the other hand, Mitt Romney came in with a lot of specifics.
Okay, you can stop it. Anyhow, Andrea Mitchell then, a little later on in the clip, says to him, "Are you sure you want to be using that word lazy?" And he's like, kind of doubled down on it. So, Paul, nobody else seems to be picking up this racial subtext. Paul in Brighton, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom. I think that when Romney called his boys liars, he meant it as a compliment.
Oh,
he
a chip off the old block, right?
Yeah. He meant it like, I'm really proud of my boys. They're following in the Romney Republican tradition. They're really good at repeating lies over and over again.
Okay, Paul. Shane informs me that you are the winner of our autographed copy of Unequal Protection: How Corporations Became People and What We Can Do About It. That is sponsored by Stamps.com. So I'm going to put you on hold, and Shane, you can let Danielle know that he's on line 9, and pick that up. John in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was calling last night when I was watching the debates. I just see the commercial forming. You remember how the one Romney advisor said, when it comes to the general election, you just shake that to sketch and move to the middle. Mm-hmm. I think if you show clips of stances he took in the primary debates, show that and then show what he took in the debate, it will undermine all of the new stories he had to tell. And I think it would be poignant. It just goes back to point out the fact that he's a flip-flopper and he's a coreless stuff suit.
Well, that's what the president is saying today. He's making a joke. He gave a speech in Denver when he made a joke about how, this guy showed up for the debate last night and he said his name was Mitt Romney, but it couldn't be because, Mitt Romney's been running around the country now for a year talking about his $5 trillion tax cut, and this guy last night, wouldn't have any of it. So
Yeah, the old Mitt Romney's new again.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot, John. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Yeah, my point is, well, I have several, but my main point is, you know, in the previous weeks when they were running the ads on Mitt Romney and they made it about Mitt Romney and not about Barack Obama, and Romney started dropping in the polls as a consequence of that. And what happened last night is Obama didn't make it about Mitt Romney. He let Romney make it about Obama, and I think that's a mistake that Obama made. And then on top of that, not only did Obama not make it about Romney, he also made it about himself. You know, he kept talking about his policies and this and that, and the impression I got was, you know, when he opened up, it was sort of as if he was making a State of the Union address, and, you know, the strategy is he forgot that the point is to win the debate. You know, it's not to, you know, make a case to the people. And one thing that really got me, I don't know if you noticed it, but when Obama, he'd be making notes, and as Romney was criticizing him, Obama would nod his head as if he was not in an agreement with
I know.
Romney.
It was a bad habit. He's got to break that habit of looking down and smiling. Or I think he was wincing, but, you know, when he was disagreeing. Thank you, Dan. I kept waiting for him to at least shake his head no. You know, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what actually happened last night, and how's this going to play out? I think the fallout is actually going to be fairly positive over the next week. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very brevirostratously ugly. The good. Carleton College. Carleton College, a small college in Minnesota, passed a campus-wide resolution earlier this week opposing Minnesota's proposed constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. The resolution states that the amendment would, quote, undermine and impede the college's efforts to recruit and retain the very best students, faculty, and staff members, end quote. Our nation's colleges and universities should be places of respect and safety for all students, regardless of their sexual orientation. Members of the LGBT community are just as hardworking, intelligent, and driven as anyone else. Kudos to Carleton for standing up to the bigotry and ignorance that is trying to take over the state of Minnesota. The bad. WAP. Numbers USA. The anti-immigration group, which wants to limit, if not stop, legal immigration, released a new ad yesterday that employs an interesting and all too common tactic. Check it out.
I'm tired of the stereotype that black Americans don't want to work. I've worked hard my whole life, but I got laid off, and I've got mouths to feed. I need a job. What I don't understand is why our leaders are going to admit another million immigrant workers next year to take jobs when 3 million black Americans can't find work. I mean, do our leaders really believe that black Americans don't want to work? Let's slow down mass immigration and save jobs for Americans, all Americans, paid for by NumbersUSA.org.
So in order to further their goal of wiping out all immigration in the United States, NumbersUSA has decided to incite racial tension and use race baiting with the African-American community. And the very, very ugly Judge Charles C. Lovell. If you want more proof that corporate corruption and greed have taken over our judicial system, then just look at Judge Lovell. Lovell, appointed to the federal bench in Montana by Ronald Reagan, issued a sweeping decision earlier today striking down Montana's law limiting political campaign contributions. And as if the decision isn't bad enough, Lovell issued it without providing any explanation of his reasoning. Instead, Lovell said he would issue his reasoning in due course because he wanted the order to be issued before the upcoming election. In the judicial world, it's nearly unheard of for a judge to issue a ruling without giving an explanation. If that doesn't say that Lovell's bench has been bought off by corporate interests, I don't know what does. And that is very, very ugly. Indeed. Welcome back. Carol in Severn, Maryland. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. I agree with your statement and some of the other viewers this afternoon about the boy liar statement, but I took something else away from it last night when I heard it, and that was a level of maturity a man
and a boy. I'm like a Romney was like a father, and and he was making a statement about Obama being a boy. Don't send a boy to do a man's job.
So you think, in addition to the racial subtext, there was a kind of paternalistic subtext?
I do indeed. Yes, I do. I believe that all of the efforts that have been made here lately to stop bullying in our schools and with our children, he set a very, very bad example for the children. And I also hope that we wouldn't end up with someone that is so devoid of character representing us around the world. I think it'd be pretty scary to have a bully and a name caller representing us.
I don't disagree. I think that, you know, Ronald Reagan at least, and thank you, Carol, for the call. I think, you know, deep down inside, Ronald Reagan was a very, very decent man. And particularly after reading his son's biography of his dad. And but, yeah, you look at his life. I think he was a decent guy. I think he was duped and, you know, bought into the line that the billionaires fed him. And ultimately it became his worldview. But I think with Mitt Romney, he knows what's going on. And, I mean, he's, you know, Ronald Reagan didn't make a living laying people off. Scott in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
My take on last night was that, aside from content, the body language, the style, as a strategy or whatever for President Obama was not working, because mostly when he looked down, I know he might have been writing notes, but when he looked down, his demeanor was submissive.
Yes, as if he was being chastised.
Yes, or that he was accepting blame. He looked like someone being chastised, and you know, Romney was all night was just the king of smirk.
Mm-hmm. He was boring holes in the president. I mean, he just stared continuously, nonstop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in closing, that what really grabbed me was when Obama looked straight into the camera. That's when I connect with him, and I think that's when he connects with the people, when he looks straight ahead into the camera, and he did that.
Yeah.
Not much at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think that he was, I don't think that he was expecting, thank you for the call. I don't think he was expecting Mitt Romney to come on with his testosterone driven. I mean, he was like a hyperactive kid who's either gone on or off his meds, depending on how you feel about them. And it was just, and I say that as a hyperactive kid myself, you know, it was not a put down, who grew up. And it just, you know, Romney was just coming off like, and also he was playing, you know, top dog, you know, Mr. Testosterone. Wayne in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Wayne, thanks for listening to KPOJ. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, I've got a little bit of a different take on the debate and basically the aftermath, because I watched PBS afterwards, and I've been listening to at least the left-leaning talk shows today, and the big story seems to be all the things that Obama didn't criticize about Romney. I think the real MacGuffin is the things about Romney. That's the big story right now. Romney's lies, the 47%, the lead-in is Obama didn't mention him or didn't challenge him, but every one of those ends with he didn't challenge Romney's lie about this or Romney's lie about that. It's like the lies have just become part of the normal conversation now that Romney's a liar. They kind of.
Oh, so your point is that had Obama challenged him during the debate, we wouldn't be having the discussion, or the corporate media, for that matter, might not be having a discussion about the lies that Romney told?
Exactly.
Huh.
The media is doing it for him.
Yeah, I don't know if this is making lemonade out of a lemon or if it was a strategy, but I think it's an interesting one. Thank you very much for the call, Wayne. Mary in New York City, listening to WWRL. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say, you were just talking about how Romney was so kind of steroided or hyper wound up. And I even Al Gore mentioned this last night, but the lackluster performance for Obama and Jim Lehrer could possibly have been altitude. Romney, I don't know if you know this, but Romney did his debate prep in Denver, which makes me think his team anticipated altitude could be a problem.
Yeah.
And Obama prepped in Nevada, and he arrived in Denver only hours before the debate. And Lehrer is being criticized for being out of it, too.
Yeah.
And Romney had the energy and was sharper than Obama and Lehrer. In my experience, unless you're used to thinner air, it saps your energy, and new arrivals feel kind of woozy.
Well, let's put a caveat on here. That makes sense to me about Jim Lehrer, who I believe is 78 years old. Because as people get older, their ability to transfer oxygen falls off. But typically the people who get really bad altitude sickness at relatively low altitudes, I mean, Denver's are 5,000 feet more or less,
right.
are people who are anemic. Usually that's menstruating women. And
actually, Tom, I spent a lot of time in Colorado, and I could tell you that young people get affected very easily.
Uh-huh.
Now, granted, I've been at more 7,000 feet altitude,
yeah.
But I do know that even Denver teams have to come, like
acclimated.
Football, baseball teams arrive earlier because of that.
Yeah.
So I'm just suggesting that perhaps while I completely agree. I think, sadly, we're left with the perceptions that you've discussed all afternoon, so it's almost irrelevant at this point, or not almost, it is irrelevant, but because we keep saying, what was the matter with Lehrer, and why was Obama so da-da-da, this might have been a factor. That's all I really
it could have been,
to say.
And I'm not disputing that. Okay, excellent point. Thank you, Mary. Dan in Stockton, California. We have a minute to the break. Dan, your thoughts?
Hi, Tom. I think that the show they called the debate last night was totally a set piece, because if anybody thinks that Obama is not a better debater than Romney, they have to be high.
Well, here's the problem. And this is a problem that I've had on this program a number of times. I get these guys on. In fact, it used to happen to me all the time when I would debate climate change. I had to become a climate change expert because, Mark Morano and others, and I call out Mark by name because, he did it so often, would come on and they just throw statistics out that were sliced and diced in a way that was deceptive. And how do you respond to that? You know, when somebody just comes on and says, well, it was actually hotter than this 200 years ago or something whatever. That's not a quote, and not to pick on Mark in that context. But how do you respond to somebody who's using numbers that aren't real? How do you, it's got to be a real challenge. And I tell you, as somebody who, like I said, I debate people for a living. I mean, you see and hear me do it on this show every day. It's a tough one. It's a real tough one.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with Debbie Wasserman Schultz in just a few minutes. And also, now, how do you deal with somebody who's lying when you're trying to debate them?
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
Indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ron in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. This is Ron. I'm in Baltimore. First-time listener. I was just listening to The Five on Fox News, and Juan Williams said that the left had abandoned Obama today, so I decided to turn over to the left radio station here on Sirius, and I can't really believe what I'm hearing. You're actually telling people, and they're actually believing, because Mitt Romney said my five boys that
right.
He's making a racial slur.
Yes, sir.
Are you
suggesting to me, Ron, that you don't think that phrase was very carefully considered by a room full of people for hours?
Yeah, I'm going to actually tell you that as a conservative, I'm going to tell you that when he said that, I didn't think of anything, nothing.
Yeah. Well, I bet you're a white guy. I bet anything, Ron. You're a white guy. And, white guys, when they hear the word boy, tend not to, even when it's directed at them, either think that it's, he's trying to diss me, saying that I'm, less mature. But that music that was playing there, that was my three boys. Was that the name of the show?
Let me ask you.
Do you refer to 34-year-old men as boys?
Yes, actually, I'm a truck driver, and you hear it all the time on the radio. Maybe you need to get in the real world. I've talked to black truck drivers all the time. As a matter of fact, coming up from D.C., we had a conversation. There was about four or five of us, and three of them were black, and every single one of them agreed.
I'm not saying that Mitt Romney didn't win the debate based on his aggressiveness and his style. Abby, if you throw 27 lies out in 38 minutes and people accept them, then, yeah, you're going to win. Does that mean you're the best for the country? But you know, again, I will stand behind it, Ron. You've wanted to move on to another topic, but I will stand behind this. I believe that was intentional, and I believe that John Sununu coming on today and talking about lazy, and I think that Sean Hannity 2 days ago hyperventilating about Barack Obama speaking with a slightly more black than normal accent when he's talking to a group of African American preachers. That, you know, all of this stuff is the same narrative, which is, hey, white people out there, have you noticed that there's a black man in the White House? That's the subtext that is being pounded on the right. Daniel in Chicago. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Tom. Not surprisingly, I think I agree with you that the big question is how do you handle a serial liar in the context of a debate? And my suggestion is that you preempt it. And if, of course, I would never be part of the team that advises the president, but if I would have been, I would have suggested that right from the start, when is his turn, the initial 2 minutes, he looks right into the camera and says something like, how difficult has been to prepare for a debate, to debate a candidate whose positions on so many issues has shifted in past times and recent times.
Yes.
I would then suggest that the American people could relate to that.
Right.
And then you open up the expectation of which Romney will show up tonight.
Yes.
And then during the course of the debate, you could confront Mitt Romney's lies, referring to this is what I meant at the start.
Yes, and which Romney are you tonight?
In a very dignified and presidential way, and which is quite natural and fitting to the president, and put Romney in a very uneasy position right from the beginning.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. Hopefully it will be played out in the next debate. We'll see. Thanks a lot for the call. Excellent point. TJ in Tinley Park, Illinois. Hey, TJ, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Love your show. I want to make you a batch of cookies or something. But anyway, I just want to comment on the fact that not only was Mitt Romney a bully and he came off as a whiny little girl who doesn't get a brand new car when she turns 16, but his entire 2 hour debate, he said nothing. Like everything that he said was devoid of any substance whatsoever. It reminds me of buying a car from some corner car lot salesman. It was terrible.
Well, number one, he said there's an unelected board that's going to control your health care, right? He tried to reprise the death panel thing. There is a board. It has nothing to do with your health care. In fact, the law specifically says that it is, let me quote, from the law. It is prohibited from rationing care, shifting costs to retirees, restricting benefits, or raising the Medicare eligibility age, end quote. I mean, so number one. Number two, he said he had a bipartisan record in Massachusetts. Oh, yeah, ask the Democrats in Massachusetts. Number three, he said that Dodd-Frank labels banks as too big to fail, says that they are too big to fail. No, sorry, not true. This, by the way, is from a list on Alternet by Alex Kane, 10 Biggest Lies. Dodd-Frank does not designate banks as too big to fail. Number four, he said that Obamacare is going to lead to a loss of health care. And by TJ, thanks a lot for the call. No, as a matter of fact, the opposite is going to happen. He talked about how the Obama economy has been a failure and 23 million people out of work. I'm sorry, the number of unemployed is 12.5 million right now, not 23 million. So, you know, Romney lied about that. And it's just incredible. We have had, I mean, you know, over the last, 3 years or thereabouts, ever since the Stimulus Act went into effect, there's actually been net positive production of jobs every month for 30 straight months now, 30 straight months since the Bush disaster. The Obamacare cuts $700 billion out of Medicare. No, it doesn't. It actually saved that money. Although Paul Ryan wanted to cut that money out of Medicare, literally slice it out of Medicare and simply apply it to the budget deficit. He said that that gasoline prices have doubled under the president. Pretty misleading. Gas prices, well, anyhow, I'm only halfway through the list. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. It's Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders will be here talking about the important issues of the week. And get your questions ready, because he'll be taking your calls as well, plus Town Hall Friday. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.